Well, hello, my friends. Welcome to Breakfast with Sergio. I am very excited because in today's episode, I'm chatting with my good friend, Michael Foster. He's an artist, he's an author, and he just released, he co-authored the book Manifestos, Reinventions, and Declarations. And today we're going to dig right into the book. Well, hey. Hello, Michael. Good to see you, my friend. How you been?
Doing good, Sergio. Good to see you.
Thank you for being here. Super excited that we can have you here as one of the two authors of the new book, Manifestos, Reinventions, and Declarations, so that we can talk about the exciting things that you've been doing, and particularly this book kind of goes back to also back when you were writing for the Huffington Post and things that you've been doing, Psychology Today, and kind of been all condensed into this kind of like new idea, which is perfect for our timing. So before we do that, what you've been doing these days, with all this lockdown and everything that's been happening?
Well, I was very fortunate because my life hasn't changed too terribly other than I don't leave the house anymore. Okay. So really, my job is good. I work as an art director at Aptitude over here in Lisle. And I'm still painting. I'm still drawing. Writing is one of my 10 careers I have. Yeah. And other than the sort of gentle hum of anxiety that we feel every day, I've been very fortunate. Both Jamie, as my wife, who's also an artist, we've been very fortunate. The last two downturns, the dot-com crash and the Great Recession, really threw us for a loop. Yeah. And so this, so far, we've been able to hang on. So let's hopefully that stays.
Very cool. And you guys have also a very nice kind of like patio outside, like yard where you can guys go out and kind of.
Yeah. If the Walking Dead happened, we could survive it here. It's a nice little out of the way place, actually.
Excellent. I love that.
You can see it. We filmed a short film. My wife and I, Jamie, it's called Life in Purgatory.
I think I saw that on YouTube
right now. Yeah. Where I'm in a big Domo costume. I almost wore the Domo costume for this interview, but I was like, that could get stale after about 3 minutes. So let's not do that. And then plus do the hair. I take off the Domo costume and I look like Lucy from the Charlie Brown comics. I finally got it to like fat Keanu Reeves look. So I'm happy. So I didn't want to jinx it, but
it's working great.
Kind of like where we live in Life in Purgatory. It's on YouTube.
Super. Well, Michael, tell us first, before we start digging into the actual content of the book, tell me a little bit about, the book itself, the title and what was like the main idea behind it. Also about your co-author.
So Russell Smith is a man I met. He's a writer. When we lived in Seattle, Jay and I lived in Seattle from 2007 to 2012. Mm-hmm. And we met through a Web 3.0 seminar I was hosting because Web 2.0 just came out. So we're like, well, let's think what Web 3.0 is. And we had a nice relationship. He's about 15 years my senior. So he's my sensei, technically speaking. And we just really hit it off. And so we started writing for the Huffington Post and Psychology Today. And he spearheaded getting us into Huffington Post. And the idea was about technology. It sort of stemmed from that Web 3.0 thing. We realized that technology was rewiring us in very interesting and sometimes frightening ways. Right. So we thought, well, we're both artists. Russell's a collage artist, and I'm a painter and digital artist. And we said, from our perspective, maybe we can write something that would be interesting for people to read and not just more technical jargon that, people just get bored with. So we did that for about 3-4 years. And then from all of those different writings, we kind of kicked it around a little bit. Like, should we write a book about this? Should we just take the essays and just make them into a book? Mm-hmm. And starting last year, because the last few years have been kind of weird, we felt like, okay, this is the time. But of course, we had waited so many years that we had to kind of rewrite a lot of it. Russell really did spearhead a lot of the adjusting because you can write about how great The Hunger Games is, but in 2019, 2020, it's kind of irrelevant. Right. Not really. No, we're heading towards The Hunger Games. Maybe it's not as irrelevant as I think. Just wait a couple years. It'll be relevant again.
He'll come back.
That's how it really came about. It felt like, okay, now's the time. I think the world really needs it. And it's something that we worked on for so long. It felt like, let's do it. Let's just put it out there. And hopefully it inspires people. Mm-hmm. It was very inspiring. And it helped Russell and I go through our goods and our ups and our downs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, if it helped us, maybe it can help other people too.
And one of the things that was pretty cool is that, when I first realized that, these are ideas that actually began much earlier in 2012, as you guys started writing together, you know, how timely they are and how, you know, I don't know how much you had to adjust, but they are, it almost feels like you just wrote this book like now, right? For the now, for what's happening as we are kind of experiencing this and getting out of here now, how then the world is looking like and how things are adjusting and changing. Some things are the same, some things are different. You know, it's very timely.
Yeah, well, you know, what's funny, because around that time when we were really writing, 2012, 2013, we were starting to see the sort of Facebook wasn't as fun as it used to be. It was just, we were starting to see cracks in that foundation and internet, the shaming that was going on, the beginning of what it became, the paranoia, the misinformation was already starting back then. And once again, I think there's a lot of smart guys out there and smart men and women, smart everybody. There's people who are just bright and they're like Donald Sutherland and Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Like, they're here, help. And you're yelling and screaming. No, he's listening. They would listen once. But you could see the warning signs. And so it was, in some ways, when we revisited the material, some of the stuff that we had seen play out, it was even worse than what we thought it could be in some cases. In some cases, better. But it definitely, we were a little bit ahead of our time. So, hey, kudos to us.
Whatever that means. It's a visionary, exactly. And, you know, I think the book presents so much material that, you know, anyone with any kind of background can come in and find something useful and dig into particularities of what they might have their own interests and such. In my case, for example, I love the idea of reinvention. You know, always looking at how do we recreate ourselves. And I actually sent you one of my videos on something I talked about a couple of years ago. And
I actually watched that back then and I rewatched it this morning. So,
you know, this idea of reinventing yourself every so often. And just like you mentioned, you know, the Web 3.0, you know, this idea of, you know, what if we as an individual, can I do a better version of myself? So I'm right now in Sergio 8.0. You know, using that as a kind of a visual illustration for me on how I can improve in my business, in my life as an artist, as a husband, as a dad, and whatever else it is. And I keep track of that on a notepad, right? So I love that idea in your book because it's a theme that continues to be developed in the book in various aspects, you know, in the aspect of culture, in the aspect of politics, in the aspect of the future, in the aspect of rights, you know, all these other things. Tell me a little bit about, you know, this overall theme of reinvention and maybe even your personal interest with that idea.
Well, you know, that was really how a lot of the articles started with Huffington Post and Psychology Today, was the idea of reinvention. And I think it was because we were all coming out of the Great Recession. And a lot of us had to reinvent ourselves. It was do or die. We needed to, whether it be our careers, our, you know, our finances, whatever, however we were living our lives, we realized, well, it's probably not going to be the same as it was. Right. So let's find new ways to do what we're already doing, better ways, more efficient ways to do what we're already doing, how we're already conducting our life. And then when we came around to this book, I think the phrase new now, which shows up a lot in the book, really sort of sums that up. And how that started was because we hated the term new normal. Remember, as COVID-19 was hitting in March, everyone was like, okay, how are we going to get back to the new normal? What's the new normal look like? And it just rubbed us the wrong way. And then through our discussions, Russell and I, we said, you know, the problem with the new normal is that one, and this is where my happy-go-lucky personality kind of becomes not so happy-go-lucky. This is going to be an ongoing problem, not just COVID-19, but, and they had predicted this back when we were first writing in 2012, 2013, that the world's going to be in kind of a crazy place, probably for most of this decade. Once this settles down, we're going to have to deal with a lot of geopolitical just collapses. There's worry about what happens in Europe and Russia and China. So even if America, for some reason, like let's say we develop a cure tomorrow and we swing out of it, this is just part one of what's going to be several years of difficulty. And that's something it's hard to wrap your mind around. But we realize that, well, the normal is out the window. There is no normal. And we shouldn't hurry getting back to normal, because a lot of times if you rush that process to find a new normal, that normal that you discover may not be a good one. A lot of times authoritarian dictatorships use that phrase or use that idea of normalization to, you know, to basically push boundaries. And then all of a sudden we accept what we're accepting today, radicalized politics, just trash talking on the internet. Right. Why is, you know, that there was a point at which that would not have been tolerated, and now we're tolerating it all the time. Right. So maybe we don't want normal. Maybe what we need to discover is something more fluid and something that's more in the moment, more immediate. More new now basically came out of that. And I think from discovering your now, what my now looks like, that's sort of becomes a catalyst for reinvention.
No, I love that.
In a sense, if that's...
Yeah, no, that's great.
I probably bored everybody talking.
No, that's great. I love that. And one of the things, like, for example, I remember in, you know, when we experienced 9/11, you know, a lot of the new normal kind of began to... Also, almost like it was like a little taste of what was going to come right now in 2020, right? And then in terms of now all of a sudden in the airports, you had to take your shoes. That has become like, you know, what many started to referring also as the new normal and things like that. So, you know, one of the things that I noticed, for example, and I don't know what you think about this, like, you know, when, as I grow older, when I think of normal, it almost like I think of at the prime of my life. When I'm at the prime, that's kind of like my set standard for normal. But I live with teenagers, right? So as we're going through this pandemic and so on, they adapt really fast. You know, for them, this kind of idea of the normal, because they're younger, you know, it's there, but it's not there. For them, the new now is like, they're really quickly adapting, figuring out what's next, how to do this online, how to do that online. You know, I think as we get older, it's harder to accept, you know, this idea of the world continues to change and change and change, because, you know, we have kind of found our own version of normality.
Well, yeah, and that's life, right? Because you have accumulated all these experiences and these thoughts and these ideas and these notions. And then it's hard because you start to become irrelevant. And we all do at some point. The world kind of is going to keep spinning. And at some point, you just get kind of tired and you're like, I'm done with it. It's your problem now. And of course, things move so quickly that I think a lot of times you could be in your 30s or in your, you know, even like late 20s. And you're thinking, oh, my God, when did everything change? And I think that being able to rewire yourself, which is documented as being much more difficult as you get older, you get set in your ways. Your brain, your hard drive gets hardwired. That's it. But it is important to always be exploring new ideas, to follow your interests, to not be afraid to say, okay, you know, this is something I've always wanted to be into in a long time. This is something I found interesting. I'm just going to deep dive into it and see how that changes and affects me. I think everybody has that. I know for me, the last couple of years, I've had a real fascination with Japanese culture. So I've been learning Japanese. I've been studying the post-World War II art scene and just everything that everything I can get my hands on. And that's been wonderful because I think that I've started to pick up some thoughts and ideas that I probably wouldn't have had I decided to not explore that curiosity.
No, that's great.
So I think we all have to find our curiosities and just go headfirst into them and and not be afraid of that.
And I love that. And I think that kind of leads right into the next thing that I want to talk about, particularly because we have a lot of artists watching, is the manifesto number 4, which is a manifesto for creativity, beginning again in the new now. So, which is really a really nice chapter that I like. And also you talk a lot about, you know, taking action, right? We can all have these big dreams, these big ideas, but unless you're actually taking action, that's actually the beginning of creativity. So tell me a little bit about that chapter for you as an artist, you know, how did you arrive into that?
Well, the idea we discovered, because, and once again, this is coming from the fact that I am an artist, a painter, and Russell's a collage artist. We both do that, is that the hardest part about doing art is getting moving. Mm-hmm. And the most gratifying part of art is when you're in that flow state. And of course, I have a block on the scientist name who came up with that in the 70s. Mikkel, I'll get it. We'll put it up later.
Okay.
But the idea that when you're in a state of flow, that tends to be when you're happiest, when you're working on something and you're just concentrated on what you're doing. And that's when we find that most contentment. But the hardest part is to get moving, especially when, you know, we live in a time when right now things are just seem to be going crazy, a layer cake of chaos, as I think the guys at Radiolab put it not too long ago. You have to learn to settle down, and then you have to be able to focus. And so that chapter was about that trying to give people that little extra push, you want to create something, but you're just distracted. You're crazed. There's worry. And let's be honest, a lot of people right now are trying to figure out how to put food on the table and they're trying to figure out how to pay rent.
Right.
And I'm fortunate enough that this go around so far, I haven't had to worry about that, but I have had to worry about that in the past. And so that is very hard to be creative, to be a fully self-realized individual. We talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? You know, the triangle where you have like food, clothing, and shelter on the bottom. And then once that's established, you work your way up to community. And then once you love, and then you can, and then once all of that foundation is put into place, you can look at self-realization and self-actualization. It's hard to do that when your basics, food, clothing, shelter, become an issue. So the whole point of the book was, is we want somebody who's reading it and they're like, man, I want to like work on something. It's just to give them that extra nudge. Like, why aren't you doing this? If not now, when? And to give them a taste, to give you and I, everybody, a taste of what it's like to be in that flow state. Man, it's so great when you're doing work. We wanted to just try to present that in a very sort of beatnikish, poetic way. And hopefully they put down the chapter if you're reading it and you're like, okay, now I got to go paint something. I mean, that's in the end is what we hope happens with the book. We hope that you read it for a while and then you become inspired and then you decide to go do something. The book is written in a way that it's engineered to to get you to take action,
basically. And you know, the way you end that chapter, you know, it's like, it's just that one little step that you need to do today. You don't need to do the whole thing, right? Just one, what's that one step? You know, maybe just taking the pencil and starting the first sketches, right? You don't have to finish a work of art today, right? It's just that one tiny step. And I think because
don't worry about that.
Exactly.
And allow yourself to have bad days. Like, I think the problem is as an artist, we put so much pressure on ourselves. We have to be brilliant today. It's like, no, I mean, life is like a marathon. It's like a, it's more like baseball. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. As long as you win more than you lose, you're fine. And don't, and take the pressure off yourself. Right now, the world's doing its own thing. So you can't allow yourself space to be creative and explore things that you haven't, that you're always wanting to get to.
And I always say, you know, the only one that's counting what you're doing is yourself, right? Nobody's actually saying, okay, let me see what Michael Foster is doing today and every day, you know. We are the only, sometimes it feels like it because this is in our hands and it feels like he's watching
us. Oh, I know. Like, it's terrifying sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, my fan base needs to see something new. Like, what? No one, when you put it out, they'll be happy. It's okay. It takes, it takes a few extra days.
And I always say, you know, anyway, if you put it today, it doesn't mean that everybody saw it, right? Actually, just a small percentage of people actually saw what you posted. So don't overthink it, don't over worry it too much. And because, and maybe that gets as a good transition to talk about something that I found quite interesting in the book, that in the chapter Manifesto number 7, where you talk about the internet is always turned on, which is not a chapter of itself, but you kind of like took that long chapter and cut it into like 7 little pieces that kind of break the whole book into almost like small breaks or thoughts, you know, as you kind of develop the whole process from the start to finish to the book. So tell me about that chapter, The Internet is Always Turned On, and why is it chopped into 7, like 7 parts?
Well, yeah, that was a funny one. And Russell's probably the better one to talk to about that because he was more spearheading that than me. But we had talked about it early on, and we had this chapter where we, in the original articles, we always talked about the internet. So we took all the articles, and then all the times we talked about the internet doing something or not doing something, we kind of started this whole like beatnik poem where it's like, the internet is always turned on. The internet is always watching you. The internet always tells the truth. The internet lies about telling the truth.
This As I read it, I wanted to almost like hear music behind
it. Exactly. You need to have the little jazz music playing or whatever in the background. Because the concept was, and we found with a lot of our original articles, was is that we were trying to explain to people that, you know, if for those who are our age who could remember a world when we weren't always plugged in, when the internet was dial up and made all that crazy noise, it sounded like it was chilling its way into the internet with a dial tone. But it was that separation, and now it is transparent. And you can tell people about that. Well, the internet's always around us, and it's, you know, it's transparent. And though we know it doesn't make you feel something. So instead of just writing a quick paragraph about it, let's create this thing that in a way emotionally connects with somebody about the internet, that the internet is almost its own life form. The internet is almost has its own agenda, and that the internet keeps is always there. So we had this huge thing And I was reading it and I was kind of going through, I was like, you know, Russell, we got to break this up. This is like half the book. And so we broke up that chapter.
I like that.
So it's funny, you go to chapter 7, you go to chapter 8, but then you go back to chapter 7, then you go to chapter 9, and it's like, but you know what? You can't have a book called Manifestos, you know, Reinventions and Declarations, and not, and it be a normal book. I think you kind of lose, you lose your brand if it plays out like everything else. But as it turns out, it's probably the most fun. And I think it's the one that gets people most stirred up because it kind of wigs people out a little bit.
And I would say, you know, as life continues and technology continues to evolve, you know, more rapidly than ever before. And I was thinking the other day, you know, I'm right now, 47, 48, something like that. I have to ask my wife. I always forget, you know, 40 something. Right. So I'm like, you know, if I were to live another 40, you know, I just cannot imagine how life was 40 years ago, you know, how much it will change the next 40 years, because the rate of change, it will be much faster from here to the next 40 than from here to the last 40, because the technology, you know, is changing rapidly so often at ever increasing steps. And so interesting. So I was thinking, you know, in the title of the internet is always turned on. And I would say, you know, it's always turned on, it's always watching, and it's always listening. Because now, as we also look at other, you know, now your Siri listens to what I say, right? Amazon, Alexa listens to what I say. And sometimes I'm talking to somebody and Siri answers like, what? You know, it just picks up, you know, part of my language that thinks I'm talking to it. And, you know, now with all these cameras all connected to the internet. So it is almost like the internet is just beginning. It feels like, you know, it's just at its early stages, even though it might seem like it's been here forever, but just the rating which it will continue to grow, I think is you know, hard to imagine. And I like how you take that concept and, you know, like, it's never ending. It just continues on and on.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, I think by the time we're old men, it's going to be the outer net and it's going to be all around us. So we're going to be just swatting it away. But it's funny, too, like how you say it's always listening. I remember I was looking up an artist. Her name is Pia Fries, and she's incredible. And I looked her up, and then they say the internet's always listening. So then on Pinterest, I started seeing ads for Burger King for fries because her name is spelled F-R-I-E-S. And then I'm like, oh man, I knew it misinterpreted what I was looking for. But then all of a sudden I wanted fries. So who screwed up in that situation? I don't know. But that being said, can I talk a little bit, because we're talking about artists, and I'm hoping what the book does is I think about it, it's like, you know, in times like this where things are just seem very much out of control and very scary, you know, we learn and we process the world through analogy. And what I mean by that is that, you know, take, for example, we talked about 9/11. When I think about 9/11, I always associate it with Lord of the Rings, because the first Lord of the Rings came out a couple months after 9/11. Okay. And there's that line that is often quoted, especially during times like this, where Frodo wishes the ring never came to him. He wishes, you know, this never happened to me. And then Gandalf's like, so do all Frodo Baggins, but, you know, it'll be okay. But the fact is that art, music, and culture is part of that analogy. And if anything, in times like this, we really go towards art, towards movies, towards culture, to make sense of what is happening. Because we don't know where this is going, and all of this is so new, we need to go back to our analogies. We need to go back to the arts and say, okay, what is this painting telling me what I can expect? What does Radiohead's Kid A tell me I could expect? What is, you know, what does Kendrick Lamar say about what is happening right now? Like, we dip into those wells. And now more than ever, it's important as artists that we don't hold back. We get our messaging out. We get whatever we can, whatever we have, put it out there, because this is how we're going to make sense of the next 10, 20, 30 years through the art and the culture and processing that as individuals to figure out what all of this means to us. Because unfortunately, because art can happen and then we can understand it, but it's going to take the rest of the world to catch up to what art is telling us today.
Right.
That I know that, man. I don't know. Quite a tangent, I guess.
No, but it's love it. We could, you know, continue talking about this book for a long time, because every chapter brings something new, some new ideas. But I know we already kind of extended quite a bit what I normally share. But I think it was well worth it. I really enjoyed this conversation. I think this will give at least our friends a good insight so they can go and get the book, Manifestos, Reinventions, and Declarations. Now is the time, my friend. Tell us, where can we go get it?
Well, right now, it's available on Barnes & Noble. If you type in Manifestos, Reinventions, and Declarations, you'll find it. It's up on Barnes & Noble as well. It's going to be up on a few other sites in the next couple of weeks. You can always go to my website, boojazz.com, like a ghost playing the saxophone, B-O-O-J-A-Z-Z. I will have links to everywhere it's going to be on sale. So that way, if you, let's say, you're like, I don't want to do Amazon, I want to do Kobo. Well, right. We should have it there too. So you can
nice that-
pick and choose where you want to grab it.
Right, and it's nice that our friends can either get it as a digital version or also as a hard, as a book itself.
Right. So, available. And and if you want an actual paperback, go to Amazon because it's exactly. available on Amazon as a paperback.
Super. Well, thank you so much, man. Thank you so much. It's always been a pleasure seeing you, and we've known each other since you guys came to Chicago. So it's such
it's so great. I feel like so much is going full circle with this project. So it's really wonderful, actually. So thank you for having me.
No, thank you so much. Of course, say hi to Jamie as well. We love you guys, and we miss you. We hope to see you very soon in some form way here in the area. So, and to all our friends watching today, please go get the book, Manifestos, Reinventions, and Declarations, whatever you prefer to consume books. Hope to check it out. And we would love to hear what you think about it. So find the book, get it, read it, and then put some comments, send me some comments. Also send some comments to Michael. You can find him. What's your Instagram? So our friends who might want to find you on Instagram and see the amazing art that you create.
I think it's Boo Jazz Studios. Hang on.
I think so too.
Wait, the internet's always turned on. I'll tell you in a moment, actually. Yes, it's Boo Jazz Studios. That's my Instagram. But you can find all of that on the website.
Excellent.
I'm probably way too exposed.
There's no such thing as overexposure anymore. I don't know.
I don't know.
All right, my friends. Have a great day. We'll see you in the next episode of Breakfast with Sergio. Share this episode with your friends. Goodbye.